Iran's president inaugurates Persian Gulf desalination project in southern Iran. 6 years of Iran's SNSC and EU's foreign policy chief wrap up fruitful discussions in Turkey. IAEA ready to resolve differences with Iran over its nuclear program. Iran says UN vote against Assad to escalate Syria crisis. And Iran's Guardian Council extends deadline for vetting presidential hopefuls. In the name of God, the compassion of the merciful, hello everyone and welcome to this edition of IRIN and English News with me, Nima Chitsas. Iran's president on Thursday inaugurated the construction project of a desalination plant in the southern city of Bandar Abbas in Hormozgan province. After being operational, the plant will change the Persian Gulf's water into fresh water for drinking, industrial and agricultural uses of local residents. It will also provide fresh water for residents of two other provinces, including the neighboring province of Kerman, southeastern Iran, and the Yazd province in central parts of the country. Speaking in the inaugural ceremony, President Ahmadinejad hoped that the project would be implemented soon, thanks to the efforts of the Iranian experts and workers. The president said the country must reduce its dependence on oil exports by expanding the mining sector and boosting agriculture. He stressed that modern agricultural technology could also help wean the country off oil money. Elsewhere in his remarks, President Ahmadinejad said some believe they can make decision for the Iranian people, adding that the enemies know if the Iranian nation find their status in the world through attaining economic development, they will turn into a powerful and developed country. He said since they know that the great Iranian nation will conquer peaks of success and economic development, they never hesitate to create obstacles through exerting pressures over Iranian nation. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council Saeed Jalili and EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton have concluded their talks in Istanbul, Turkey. Describing the negotiations as fruitful, speaking to reporters, Jalili said he held fruitful talks with Ashton, adding the two sides agreed to meet again in the near future. Jalili further said the two sides will soon hold talks again to set a date for the meeting. Ashton, representing the P5+1 group, also said she had useful discussions with Iran's chief nuclear negotiator in Istanbul on May 15. Ahead of the Wednesday talks, Jalili had said Iran was still waiting for answers to the proposals it made to the P5+1 group in April. During the April meeting, Iran presented the P5+1 with the details of its proposal to launch a new round of cooperation between the two sides. Iran and the P5+1 have held several rounds of talks, mainly over the Iranian peaceful nuclear energy program.
The talks were fruitful, but they need to continue. This can take place either before or after the elections in Iran, because these talks are happening at a national level and involve everyone in Iran. We support the Iranian public, so a decision has been made to continue negotiations and hold talks again in the near future. They rejected the Tehran declaration. They didn't accept it. And we hope that when the opportunity arises, the P5+1 will take the Tehran declaration into consideration. At the first P5+1 meeting in Almaty, they told us to think about the preparations for enriching uranium to 20% for Iran. I hope they think about that.
Meantime, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the IAEA opened fresh talks in Vienna, Austria, to negotiate a technical framework for cooperation over Tehran's nuclear program. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA, Ali Asghar Soltania, headed the Iranian delegation, while head of the Department of Safeguards, Herman Nakart, represented the IAEA. At the last part of the session, Nakart said his team will work hard to resolve differences with Iran over its nuclear energy program. The Iranian envoy also noted that the two sides will work hard on proposals to meet positive results during next meeting.
proposals were given by both sides. We have decided that both sides will work out carefully on these proposals given today. And then the next meeting will give the results. But aiming of this whole elaboration is to bridge the gaps towards the conclusion of the text by the next meeting. Therefore, I have to say that we had a very constructive and intensive discussion today, and this will continue.
Elsewhere, Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council condemned the recent deadly bombings in Turkey's border region with Syria. During a press conference in the Iranian consulate in Istanbul on Thursday, Said Jalili denounced the massacre of innocent people. He said borders between the countries in the region should be the borders of friendship, cooperation, and security. Jalili further underlined the need for the formation of a security framework within the region. The Iranian official said the enemies should not be allowed to conduct any acts against regional nations. Jalili added, Syria is also an important force against the Zionist regime and in supporting the resistance movement. On May 11, at least 51 people were killed and more than 140 others injured after a series of blasts hit the Turkish town of Reyhanlı in the southern province of Hatay. Turkey has accused Syria of being behind the bomb attacks, while Damascus dismisses the allegation. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman on Thursday said a UN General Assembly vote condemning Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government over escalation of the civil war will embolden extremist groups in Syria. Abbas Araghchi added, the resolution is against international efforts to find a peaceful solution to the crisis that has killed many people since March 2011. The resolution was adopted by 107 countries in the 193-member assembly, down from 133 when the last vote was held in August. Meantime, Iranian officials said the U.S. opposition to various international disarmament conventions is a great obstacle to advancing the issue of global disarmament. Araghchi continued that the U.S. opposition to biological and chemical weapons conventions and efforts to prevent global denuclearization as well as a nuclear-free Middle East are all part of Washington's black record of non-compliance with international obligations. Referring to Iran's role in founding the UN Disarmament Conference, Araghchi said, the Islamic Republic has always played an instrumental and constructive role in advancing the objectives of the conference. He further noted that Iran has also played a key role in negotiations on international treaties, including the Chemical Weapons Convention. The Iranian spokesman said the Islamic Republic of Iran will continue to tap into all national and international potentials to contribute to the creation of a free world of mass destruction weapons. Iran's top electoral supervisory body, the Guardian Council, has extended the deadline for announcing the names of approved hopefuls for the June 14 presidential elections. Spokesman for the body, Abbas Ali Katkhodai, said the Guardian Council will have until the 21st of May to announce the final list of candidates. Under Iran's election law, the Guardian Council, the body tasked with the vetting process, is required to announce the list of approved hopefuls within 5 days after the end of registration. This period can be extended another 5 days if necessary. After the vetting process is complete, the 12-member supervisory body will release the final list of candidates to the Interior Ministry, which will then publicize the roster. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations says approval of the U.S.-backed anti-Syria resolution would increase the risk of crisis in the region. Mohammad Khazai made the remarks at the Wednesday meeting of the United Nations General Assembly, which was held to vote on a draft resolution against the Syrian government. Khazai said approving the anti-Syria resolution would undermine latest international efforts to find a peaceful solution for the ongoing crisis in Syria. He further expressed concern about mounting sectarian conflicts and expansion of extremism in Syria. He further described operations underway in Syria by the armed opposition groups as a major threat to the regional security and stability, urging the UN states to find a balanced and peaceful solution for the Syrian crisis. This comes as the foreign-sponsored militants in Syria continue to suffer heavy losses as the Syrian army troops have killed many gunmen during mop-up operations around the cities of Homs and Daraa. A unit of government forces also shot dead scores of armed men in the town of Al-Dara Kabir. Syrian forces also stormed terrorist hideouts in the village of Hola, in northwest of Homs. Large amounts of weapons and ammunition were also destroyed after the fierce clashes. Separately, Syrian army forces drove back a group of militants who were attempting to launch an attack on a military checkpoint on the outskirts of the city of Daraa. The gunmen tried to enter the checkpoint from three sides, but were repelled and forced to flee. Turmoil has gripped Syria since March 2011, and many people, including large numbers of Syrian security forces, have been killed in the unrest. Meantime, a new video clip shows the foreign-backed Al-Qaeda-linked and Nusra Front terrorists in Syria executing a group of 11 Syrian soldiers summer-style. For those of you dear viewers underage or the ones with cardiovascular issues, this footage may be disturbing. The incident reportedly took place in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. In the video, the terrorist executing the soldiers is speaking with a Saudi accent. However, the armed terrorists are still being supported by certain countries. Elsewhere, another footage circulated on the internet shows a cannibal terrorist, Khalid al-Hamad, also known as Abu Sakar, cutting out an organ of a Syrian soldier and biting into it. At the time of the filming, Hamad believed he was eating the man's liver, but a surgeon who saw the video said the organ was actually a lung. On May 14, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, said the inhuman act was a truly atrocious act and that it should be investigated as a war crime. And here's another look at tonight's top stories. Iran's president inaugurates Persian Gulf desalination project in southern Iran. 6 years of Iran's SNSC and EU's foreign policy chief wrap up fruitful discussions in Turkey. IAEA ready to resolve differences with Iran over its nuclear program. Iran says UN vote against Assad to escalate Syria crisis. And Iran's Guardian Council extends deadline for vetting presidential hopefuls. A suicide bomber attacked Shiite mourners in northern Iraq on Thursday, killing 12 people. The suicide bomber tried to enter Al-Zahra Husseiniya in Kirkuk, where relatives of victims from recent violence the day before were receiving condolences. But the attacker was stopped by the police. The bomber then detonated an explosives belt at the entrance, killing 12 people and wounding 40 others. The attack was the latest in a wave of assaults targeting both Sunni and Shiite places of worship. Elsewhere in Mosul, a suicide bomber driving an explosives rigged vehicle killed 2 soldiers and wounded 3, while a car bomb wounded 2 police and 3 civilians. Meanwhile, in the capital city of Baghdad, car bombs killed 10 people and wounded 30 others. Gunmen also shot dead the brother of a Sunni lawmaker in the Bayah area of the capital. With the latest attacks, 75 people have been killed in 3 days of violence in Iraq, and 189 have died in the unrest so far this month. The attacks came as Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki blamed sectarianism for violence in the country. A suicide car bomb targeted a foreign military convoy in Kabul on Thursday, killing 14 people, including 6 NATO personnel and 2 children, in the deadliest attack in the Afghan capital for nearly a year. The powerful explosion, which took place in the Shah Shahid southeastern residential district, also injured 37 passersby, including many children going to school. In total, 8 Afghans died, along with 2 NATO soldiers and 4 NATO contractors who were traveling through the city's busy rush hour traffic. Thursday's bomb was the first major attack in Kabul since March 9, when a suicide bomber on a bicycle killed 9 people outside the Defense Ministry during a visit by U.S. Defense Secretary. Over 70 U.S.-led foreign troops have been killed in Afghanistan so far this year. Most of those who have died are Americans. The latest deaths bring the number of U.S.-led soldiers killed in Afghanistan this year to at least 65. Around 3,314 foreign soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan since the U.S.-led war began in October 2001. Gunmen in Pakistan's northwestern tribal region near the Afghan border have attacked a NATO truck transporting goods for the foreign forces in Afghanistan, killing the driver and wounding another person. The attack was carried out in the Jamrud area of Khyber Agency on Thursday when armed men opened fire on the truck. And finally, until now, men with prostate cancer have faced a dilemma whether to treat their disease and suffer side effects or persuade doctors to monitor their disease. The decisions are usually made on how aggressive the cancer is. But now new accurate genetic tests could lessen the guessing game and spare some men the side effects of treatment. Surgery along with radiation is a common method of treatment. Many doctors urge patients to postpone operating until the risk to their health is more serious. It's a tough decision to make with life-changing consequences for them. But now new genetic tests may make it easier for men with prostate cancer to decide whether to treat their cancer right away or safely monitor it.
Try and minimize those side effects and treat men only who need it. When a man's diagnosed with cancer, it's hard for them to believe, them and their family members, that it doesn't need to be treated.
And on that note, we come to a wrap of this edition of IRI and English News. Join us tomorrow night with the latest updates. Goodbye now.